Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And a beautiful day. I mean, we'll get into the specifics, really dive deep into the kind of day we're looking at 12:30 at the beginning of Nobservations. But Rick, I did a little research in some weather terms, and I'm taking it very seriously.
And that's why I appreciate you, Dave. I mean, because you're bringing a new element to the show, and because you're a professional. I mean, I don't know now because you lost so much weight pound for pound, but this is why you're great. Because you take this thing serious, and you're going to give us your best interpretation of the weather.
Yeah, I'm going to do everything I can. So we say good morning to you, and we got a lot to do. Mike Tenenbaum at 11 o'clock. Chris, we'll say good morning, and then I have somewhat of a surprise for both of you guys at some point during the show. But good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. I feel pretty good. I feel like we are heading in the right direction in this country, and you know, the sports, we can see a potential return for everything outside of baseball. So I feel pretty good this morning.
Yeah, I feel like everything is headed in the right direction except for the negotiations with Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it feels that way, doesn't it?
I feel like everything else is moving in the right direction.
Well, NBA, I mean, we have a start date. NHL, yeah. We know we're going to get one. NFL, we're talking about training camp starting in a little more than a month from right now. You know, we got golf this week. We're talking about the tennis being played. So things are all heading in the right direction. Except for, as you mentioned, Major League Baseball, which, and I know your stance is that you still don't believe it's going to happen. And I don't know why I feel like this, and I think you do as well, Rick. I just think 11th hour that the players will kind of move a little bit towards caving. The owners will figure out a way to get it done, and that we will see baseball 11th hour. I think until it's a drop dead date, but I think we will get baseball at some point.
Well, Dave, here's the thing. I believe that the owners can unilaterally impose a 48-game season on the players if they so choose. I mean, that was what was floated out there last week. Now, I know they had the 76-game proposal yesterday, but the owners don't need the players' approval for Rob Manfred to set the schedule and say we're going to play baseball during this part, and this is the maximum amount of games that we're going to go to. So For me, I just don't like the bickering publicly back and forth.
It's awful.
But in terms of whether or not we're going to have a baseball season, I mean, if the owners want to play baseball, we are going to play baseball. The only question is, what are the implications of the owners imposing that shortened season on the players as far as the collective bargaining agreement negotiations and the 2021 regular season? That's the big question.
Well, here's the other question, too, and I get it. I mean, from the get-go, I don't think anyone on the show and the fans definitely haven't appreciated it. I mean, bickering back and forth about money and finances with where we're at as a country. I mean, it's sickening, really. I mean, that's the bottom line. But, I mean, if you're the players, just to kind of give you what they're probably thinking at the moment, is this really negotiating? I mean, even the newest proposal, it's just a repackaged version of their other proposals. I mean, not much has changed. The only thing that's changed, and if you look at this, I was reading that, reading through some of the stuff last night and into this morning, is, yeah, we'll give you $200 million more for the postseason, but if you actually read the new proposal, that's adding two more teams to the playoffs. So you're going to have 16 teams. You're going to have 1 through 8.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. One place, 8, and everything else.
And that's a 3 series, I believe.
Yeah, and if you read this article, I mean, that's going to be the extra $200 million. Or $250 million that we'll give you $200 of. So, I mean, we're giving you another playoff series, which is going to generate another $250 million bucks, and you're going to give us $200 of it. So what are you giving back? If you're the player saying to those, what are you giving us back? You're giving us the $200 million we just gave you for allowing you to have two extra playoff teams.
it's diabolical.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course I understand what you're saying.
So, I mean, it's ridiculous, really, and that's exactly, and the owners know this, because they'll pretend like they're actually negotiating, and they'll float out these deals, and we'll see, okay, at least it looks like they're trying to get a deal done, when in actuality, they're really not. They're just repackaging these deals and sending them to the union, and then, you know, they're hoping that the union fumbles around with it, and they look like the bad guys in the situation.
Well, Rick, the one thing I will say to your point, we have an idea now of what the owners want to spend on player costs this upcoming season. It's about $1.4, $1.5 billion, and not a penny more. That's what it is. They're saying this is the number, and we'll try to sell it to the players any way we can. We'll repackage it. We'll say that this is how it benefits them. But in actuality, they're trying to control costs and have some certainty in uncertain times in terms of what they're going through financially. And it just doesn't feel like it's right for the players to have to bear the brunt of the economic impact of the pandemic with the sports. So I just feel like the owners are being opportunists. And really, when you look at these proposals, I don't know how you could think otherwise.
Yeah, it's just playing around.
What I don't understand. Go ahead, Rick.
No, I was just going to say. I mean, it's just manipulating games and everything else in mm-hmm. coming up with the same conclusion. When you read through the deal, like Chris said, they have a number they want to spend on player costs this season, and it's around $1.4 billion. And now it's on the players to decide how many games do they want to play for that $1.4
billion. Correct.
Yeah.
But what I don't understand, I mentioned it yesterday, and you guys certainly have a better grasp of this than I do, is, and you had mentioned this also, Chris, why can't we involve deferred money? Like, why can't they split up the $1.4 billion, which allows, 50 games somewhere in that neighborhood, and then play an extra 25, 30 games and defer that money until Major League Baseball is a healthier sport?
Because they don't know what's going to come of the 2021 season and the negotiations for the new collective bargaining agreement, Dave. That's the only thing that I can think of as to why the owners wouldn't propose deferments. Like that's the only part that wouldn't make sense. Like I just, for me, it feels like because they already have the instrument in baseball and it's used in normal business practices for the sport, I don't understand why you wouldn't try to use deferrals as a way to mm-hmm. bridge the divide in terms of where they're at with money and where the players are at with money. Because, I mean, the only reason that the players proposed a 114-game regular season is because they're concerned about the money. The guys want to get paid. Rick talked about it yesterday on the show. Like, there aren't a whole lot of guys that can afford to miss, over half of the money that you were scheduled to make in the upcoming season. There aren't a whole lot of guys that can survive that in baseball. And so I think that's a simple way to try to make both sides happy. It just feels like the owners are taking advantage of what the situation is, and they're recognizing that we might not have to use deferrals because the players might end up accepting this deal anyway, because mm-hmm. a lot of them really won't have a whole lot of choice.
Yeah, the other thing too, Dave, is it makes perfect sense, which would lead you to believe that it's not making the owners enough money. At this point, I think the owner's mindset is because it's not going to be 162, because anything is going to feel like, any amount of games isn't going to feel right to a baseball purist. Why do we need to play these extra games then?
Well, because you know what I'm saying? The purist is going to say, well, it's 162 and now you're playing 50. But you know what? I do think that it's a more legitimate season if you play 80 games as opposed to 50 games. Not that I'm one of those people that says if it's 50 and you win a championship, it doesn't count. But, being practical, would I rather see 80 games than 50? Sure, I'd rather see more games than less games.
Yeah, you'd rather see more games. But is that going to keep you away from watching baseball when it's back if it's 50 or 57 or 65?
Well, they said we're going to have a 30-game season. Okay, I don't like it, but I'm in.
Okay, so the owners have that in their back pocket, right? They want to spend a certain amount of money. And they can, because of the agreement they made in March, Rob Manfred can unilaterally impose a schedule on the players. And if they choose not to play, the owners can go after them because they're in breach of their contracts. And you already saw it. I mean, you saw that not only do they have to sign a waiver, if you have a previous health condition, okay, you'll get your service time and you'll get paid. But if you don't and you don't show up, you're not going to get service time and you're not going to get paid.
Right.
So if we put out a 50-game schedule, that service time that we talked about, you're not going to get that. And whatever money you would have made in that 50 games, you're not going to get that either.
So you have to show up.
And then it'll go.
For you to take it to the next step in your career, you have to show up.
Yeah.
You have to show up. And the whole time the owners realize is that because they own the team, they have an appreciating asset. And we as players, just by nature, we're a depreciating asset. Every year goes by, our value depreciates because we're getting older.
Yeah, the owners can own the team forever. The players have a certain amount of time that they can play baseball, and then they're going to be told to leave. But I think what you touched on just now, Rick, is something that's also important in terms of how all of this is going to play out, because the reality is that even though the players will have the option to sit out if they don't want to risk their health, I think the reality of the situation is most of the guys will play, you know, even if it's begrudgingly, just because of what you mentioned, the service time. You know, guys want to have that extra season that can put them closer to being on the open market, and you're not going to get that unless you show up. So I think that if Rob Manfred does decide to move forward with the 48-game schedule, you're going to hear about a lot of players, you know, taking that as the owners taking a shot at them. And then I think it's going to set the stage for an ugly battle with this next collective bargaining agreement negotiation.
But at the end of this, I mean, going back and forth over the last, couple months with this, I mean, the entire time they probably should have just been locked in a room trying to figure something out, because it's only getting more and more contentious.
Mm-hmm.
You lose
and
now
later.
If there's no baseball. Yeah, but you lose now if there's no baseball. And more importantly, you're going to lose later too, because the longer this goes on, the worse the relationship is going to get. So now, I mean, if there is a 50-game schedule, guys decide they don't want to show up, they don't get the service time, they don't get the money, when this CBA is up and it's time to renegotiate, now all of a sudden you bring, you know, a player strike into the conversation. It's just going to get worse. It's only exacerbating the problem having an agreement now and not having baseball. It's only going to get worse from here.
But before we even get there, Rick, I'm sure that Tony Clark and the MLBPA is going to file a grievance in court about the owners in that 48-game schedule, because in the agreement that they had back in March, there was a stipulation that said that the owners would have to try to do everything that they can to have the longest possible season. And if you just proposed a 76-game schedule yesterday, I mean, to come back, you know, a week or two later and say, well, okay, we're moving forward with 48 games, it seems a little disingenuous. It doesn't seem like you put forth a good faith effort in terms of trying to have as long a season as you possibly could.
Well, I don't think they care. I think the owners would be perfectly happy with 48 games. They pay what they pay.
Well, you can say they don't care, Dave, but they're going to have to prove their case in a court. I mean, this is what it's going to lead to. This is going to set the stage for, you know, litigation from the Players Association toward the MLB and the owners. And that's just going to add another layer of ugliness to an already ugly situation that is the prelude to their collective bargaining agreement negotiations.
Yeah, so you don't win now, and you're not going to win next year, and you're not going to win in the year. I mean, it makes no sense. You're only hurting the sport. You're trying to hurt each other at this point. Like, you're trying to, you know, each side doesn't want to budge, so each side is going to get hurt, but your sport is getting hurt. No one's going to win in this situation. The owners won't win. The players won't win.
No, and
this
loses,
year they won't win.
And who loses, as always?
The fans lose.
Always.
Yeah, I mean, it's just we're at a point now where, I mean, I just don't know why there hasn't been dialogue this entire time. Like, why they couldn't. And I said this yesterday, and Dave, you agree with me, Chris didn't. I'm not saying, like, handshake willy-nilly, like, okay, good faith, let's start, you know, adding some things into the next CBA negotiations. There are smart people here. I mean, there are people that are qualified, lawyers and everything else. Like, get that stuff written down. Like, know going into the next negotiation that, you know, we're going to have expanded playoffs.
Absolutely.
Players will be willing to be mic'd up. You know, you'll have the opportunity now where you won't have draft compensation attached to free agents, which is in favor of the players. Like,
yeah,
get
put
that
the
stuff
framework,
on paper now.
Put the framework of next deal in as you finish this deal.
Yeah, so I mean, so the players are more willing to budge at the moment,
mm-hmm,
because they're just focused on now. This is guaranteed money. This is what I see. I don't know what free agency is going to be next year. I don't know what the season's going to look like, how many games, when it's going to start, if there's going to be fans. Like, if I'm Mookie Betts right now, I'm like, what the hell is going to happen to me next year?
Yeah.
I'm expected to get paid, you know, hundreds
of
millions
of dollars.
He's
got to play no matter what. He's got to come back and play.
Yeah, Mookie Betts is probably willing to play the shortest possible season in order to get to free agency. So I'm sure the 48 games doesn't bother him. Why would it make a difference to him? He's going to get his money. Whether they pay 48 games, 76 games, it doesn't matter. But for other players, it does matter. You know, for that middle-of-the-road veteran player that's trying to cash in, You know, he might find himself, you know, right at 30 or maybe even on the wrong side of 30. That's the guy that's a little on edge right now.
Sure.
Because he hasn't made enough money to say that he can hold out and miss a whole season's worth of checks. And he's looking for that last payday that he's potentially going to get during his playing career. So I think that when it starts coming to the actual issues that the players are concerned with, it runs the gambit because players are in different situations. That's why Rick always talks about the negotiations with CBAs being so tough for the players to win, because you have so many different interests to look after, whereas the owners, they're all aligned in what they're trying to do.
All right, 800-919-3776. Let's get to some of the calls. Let's start out with Scotty in Albany. Scott, you're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show. Canty, thank you for the Super Bowl. I just wanted to say, you guys mentioned it, the waiver that the owners are having the players sign. I don't even know why they put that in there, especially if it relates to their own safety protocols that they're putting in, and they expect the players to be liable for their own failures of the safety protocols. It doesn't seem like they're negotiating in good faith. I see both sides of it, but I just wanted your take on whether you think the waiver is going to be something that ends up in the final agreement or not. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Appreciate it.
I think part of that waiver would be part of the leverage for the players. You want me to sign this waiver, not knowing the long-term ramifications of COVID-19, so I can't sue you down the line, then you're going to have to give me something in return.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes back to where this thing was screwed up in the beginning with Tony Clark. The message the entire time should have always been COVID-19 and safety. It should have never come out of the mouth of the union, especially the head of the union, that the finances would be a reason why this thing wouldn't restart. Should have been we're taking on 100% of the health risk, and that's all we're concerned about.
Right.
Now
we should be unified, and that is our message. Not about finances, not about percentage, not about deferment, none of that. It's all about health of our players. That was the way for the players to go. And I mean, 10 seconds in, it wasn't that anymore. It was about the money.
Yeah, but that's the way the owners wanted the conversation to go. Because if the owners don't put the bait out there for the players and for Tony Clark and the union, then they don't bite on it. And that's the part of it that I don't understand why baseball fans can't see that, and why they always want to rush to side with the owners. Like, it's not about the players making this about money. The owners are also making this about money. And so everybody coming out and being critical of the players and saying, well, they're the reason why we don't have baseball. Listen, we could have baseball if the owners wanted to put out a fair proposal and not be opportunists, but that's not where the owners are. So I guess I have a little bit of a different slant just because I was in it. But, I mean, it takes two links to rattle the chain. I mean, the reason why this is so noisy and so messy is because the owners wanted the negotiations to happen in the court of public opinion. They wanted to put this pressure on the players to see if they would fold, to see if they could get more favorable labor terms. So, I mean, it's ugly, and I don't understand why fans can't see the owner's fault in all of this. But what I don't know is whether or not the players and the owners are going to be able to come to some middle ground in order for us to have an amicable relationship moving forward with this season. I just don't see that happening.
It's like that dumb fish. You guys ever go fishing?
Occasionally.
Dave, you fish at all?
Occasionally.
Can't you fish?
Yes. Of course I fish. Yeah.
Yeah, of course you fish. It's like that dumb fish. Like you catch the fish, you put it back, and then 10 minutes later you catch the same fish.
The same one?
Hey, what's wrong with you? You don't. I didn't switch baits. It's the same bait. I just caught him. You didn't realize the first time?
And Rick, he still might have the hook from the first time you caught him in his mouth.
Exactly right.
That happened to me one time.
I just put you back. It's like the players, like, come on, like, this isn't your first rodeo. Tony Clark, come on, man. Like, you gotta be smarter than this. The owners play the same game. It's like they got a playbook. And they always go to the playbook.
Well, there's also 30 of them, right? I mean, you have, 30 plus players on every team, so you're looking at 1,500 players as opposed to 30 owners. So, I mean, it's a big difference.
Yeah, but I mean, you're seeing this in the NFL. If you want change, you have to have solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beauty of the baseball, of Major League Baseball's union, was they had solidarity. And they're starting to since the last CBA negotiation where the owners felt like they got what they wanted and the players union didn't do as well as they thought. It almost feels like the owners, that they know they see the crack and they want to exploit it now.
Yep. And Rick, you said you got to have solidarity if you're going to have any chance at this fight in the, against the owners. The other thing you have to be willing to do is drag the owners to court. You have to be willing to do that. Otherwise, it's going to be tough to be able to win. Your union, your constituency has to have the fortitude to say, you know what? If this is going to, this is going to go the distance, if we have to actually go into a courtroom to try to fight this battle, then that's exactly what we're going to do. And I think that that's what this is shaping up for, because there's no way that Tony Clark and the union are going to go down quietly if Rob Manfred imposes that 48-game schedule. There's no way. That is absolutely going to lead to them going to court.
That's just what we need.
It's not what we need. It's not what the game needs. I mean, we've already seen this play out. I mean, we understand what happened back in 94 and how long, you know, it took Major League Baseball to come back. I mean, you get to see on Sunday, you'll see the McGuire, you know, Sosa 30 for 30.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, though, too, is what I would be scared of if I was a player, especially one of these players going into free agency. And we saw this 2 years ago, how long it took, you know, Manny Machado to get his money, how long it took for Bryce Harper to get his money, right? How many of the, you know, 30-something free agents weren't getting long-term deals, weren't getting their money, unless they were represented by Brody Van Wagenen, and then you get an extra year on your deal just because of the relationship, which is great for us. There's no floor in Major League Baseball. That's what would scare the hell out of me. Like, if they want to make the players pay for this in free agency and how much money they spend, there's no floor in Major League Baseball. I mean, you got teams spending $200 million. You got teams like the Rays spending $60
right.
million.
Marlins spend nothing.
So, I mean, they can, again, it won't be, I mean, they could independently decide, you know what? Screw you, players. We'll make you pay this way. Which is scary because, I mean, they control the purse strings, man. They're the ones signing these checks.
That is a scary thing. But you know what, Rick? Maybe the MLBPA should take a page out of the NFLPA. And the fact that maybe they need to start thinking about trying to set a salary floor. I know baseball doesn't have a salary cap, but maybe setting a salary floor would be the answer to some of the issues that we've seen about baseball with teams deciding that they're going to tank and do all of these other different things. And even in an offseason where they don't want to spend money like we saw a couple of years ago. Like, maybe that could be one of the things that Tony Clark barters with the owners for. Because that's also something that, from a practical standpoint, will lead to more favorable terms for your players, because it's actually forcing teams to spend money, teams that wouldn't otherwise do so. Teams like the Miami Marlins and what they've been doing the past couple of years, like what the Houston Astros did at the beginning of last decade. Like, those things are despicable. You talk about teams losing 110 games, that's ridiculous.
But they don't care.
No, they don't care. But my thing is this, Dave, if you do have a salary floor, then teams will be forced to spend some of that money. Like, some of the practices that we've seen from small market teams around baseball, they wouldn't be able to do that anymore. Maybe that's one of the things that you try to negotiate for if you're Tony Clark. Seems like it would make a whole lot of sense, and it seems like it would solve some problems in terms of making sure that you're seeing a better product on a team-by-team basis throughout baseball.
Especially because you already have, in essence, a ceiling.
Yeah, the luxury tax.
Yeah, which teams are using now as a de facto salary cap.
Right, because they don't want to go over that and start paying more.
This is not the time to be having these conversations if you're Major League Baseball in the union under these circumstances. But, again, goes back to the point Chris keeps making, and I've dealt with this. Chris has dealt with this. I mean, I lost the whole season. We got locked out for a whole season during CBA negotiations. The fans always side with the billionaire owners, and that's the reality. Is they'll always blame the players. I don't know why it is, but here's what's crazy, though, is you have, you know, owners locking out players, you know, making demands on players, whatever. We can't come to an agreement. Fans side with the billionaires. But then we'll have, you know, stories about what the Oakland A's are doing, cutting minor leaguers, you know, furloughing people and everything else. There'll be public outrage. And then a couple days later, we changed our minds. We made a mistake.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But they rely on the fact that the fan, in situations like these, for some reason, they'll keep the crowd up, court of public opinion, the owners will win. And they rely on that. And they feed into that.
Well, and then the player becomes the bad guy. And all the fans get furious about it.
Yeah, because the fans want to see the
games. I don't know why it is kind of my query.
Because the team's not going anywhere.
That's
the team isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
The team will always be there. The players will change. The team will always be there for you. Because you root for the laundry. You may have your favorite players, but you root for the laundry.
You do. You absolutely do. Now, I have a little bit of a treat for you guys. I don't know if you'd like me to bring it up now, save it for later in the show. It's something that's going to be involved with tomorrow's show. So you tell me what you're, if you'd like it to be a sweetener for later or something you would just like me to tell you right now.
I would prefer it now because, okay. I mean,
you don't wait well?
I don't wait well. I'm bad with surprises. On top of that, you teased yesterday that you helped Don with his list, and Don's list was not well received by Michael and Peter. So you kind of need to redeem yourself here.
Well, I listen, I'll tell you now, you don't need to make me feel badly. And I don't know that I look at those guys as Giants aficionados. I think Don knows a lot more about the Giants than Michael or Peter.
Well, they didn't have to know. They got all five. There was no conversation. It was boom, boom, boom.
All right. So then how is it a question? Obviously, he put a good list together.
It's supposed to be, I mean, the whole point of the list is to, you know, hopefully eat up a segment with the list. If I go 5 for 5 and the list takes, 90 seconds,
well,
what am I doing for the rest of the
list? Maybe the topic wasn't good, but his overall list was well done. Maybe the topic was too easy.
Exactly right.
He said to me, Dave, I'm doing the top 5 Giants. Can you help me with it? I helped him with that. I didn't say don't do that. For my participation, I thought we did well.
Let's be honest, though. Let's be honest. How long did it take you? Don't lie. How long did it take you when he asked you top 5 Giants in the 80s? How long did it take you?
Well, I rattled off an answer, but then I took it so seriously. I responded 5 minutes later. I said, Don, here's the thing. I don't really have time to do this now because we're having a barbecue. I said, here's what I believe is my top 5. I'd like to go spend some more time on it later tonight and get back to you with an additional answer. And I did that. And I moved.
But did it change? But did the
five
move change?
Carl Banks up. I think that Carl Banks is hindered by the greatness of Lawrence Taylor and that people don't appreciate Banks for as good as he was. So I had Banks over Bavaro, but he did not agree with that.
Oh, you had Banks over Bavaro.
Mm-hmm.
See, but that would have been interesting. Had he gone with your list, maybe that creates more conversation.
Maybe.
But yeah, Carl Banks was absolutely a better football player than Mark Bavaro.
I think they were both great players. It actually made me sad doing that list to realize how great the Giants were in the 80s and what they've been for the last couple of years and where they are now. They were great. Those Giants teams were unbelievable.
A lot of pride within that organization. It's been really bad to the last part of this decade, Dave.
You're not kidding. All right, so you want it now. You want the little nugget right now. All right, we have a guest coming on the show tomorrow that we have not had in a long time. We like him greatly. We consider him one of our favorites. And
Paul
right
Feinbaum.
Yeah, that's right. Paul Feinbaum, noon tomorrow.
Nice. That's a good get. That's a real good get.
Nice.
Paul Feinbaum, noon tomorrow.
I love it.
I have so many questions about college football, too. So many questions right now.
I mean, we got him at 12. I don't think he's got anything going on in the 12 o'clock hour. Maybe he'll spend half an hour with us.
Here we go.
And then I saw this, Rick, which... Chris, I'm hesitant to bring this to his attention. It's from National Geographic. It's about an animal
here
that'll
go.
Terrify him. Wait, you think we should bring this to his attention or no? Or we could tease it.
I got my own issues. I'm sitting here. I'm putting on a brave face. Things are not great here at the DiPietro household. Not great at all.
What do you mean a brave face?
This chipmunk's up the ante. And I'm not even joking. This chipmunk has officially upped the ante yesterday.
What happened?
This chipmunk is and Chris will appreciate it, is the Larry Allen of chipmunks.
He's immovable?
No, this thing is going to tell you. He'll look you straight in the eye, tell you, I'm going to eat your carrots, and you can't stop me. I'm out by the pool yesterday. There's another hole in the carrots. Clearly got into them again. I'm laying on the chair watching the kids in the pool, grabbing a drink quickly, and I look to my right, and the chipmunk is legitimately 3 feet away from me, just standing there looking at me.
He's just staring at you. Because there's nothing you can do. If you
exactly
get up and go
right
after him, all you do is shoo him off. You can't catch him.
No, he knows this. Now he's mocking me. He is taunting
me. What have you done to stop him?
We sprinkled some lime around the situation. That hasn't worked. Everyone wants me to do this bucket of death. Cassie won't let me do it. With the sunflower seeds and the little ramp up. I don't even think it'll work at this point. I think
you put the seeds on top of a thing of water and then he falls in?
Yeah, but I think this chipmunk is smarter than us, and he'll find a way to get the...
See, Cassie's got to take her personal feelings out of this.
She thought... Here was her idea. Maybe this was recently, maybe previously a domesticated chipmunk that is now calling out to be readopted.
No.
Because she has a friend in... that you laugh. She has... Again, did this happen in Florida? She has a close friend in Florida that had the same situation with a squirrel. And the squirrel was like not afraid of people at all. So she's like, I wonder what's going on with the squirrel. One day, squirrel's just hanging at the front door. She opens the front door, and the squirrel crawls up her leg and just like a pet. It must have been somebody's pet squirrel, and now, you know, she has a pet squirrel. I'm not joking. That's a true story.
That's exactly right. Strange story. And you are not bringing a chipmunk into your home.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, that's a cartoon.
Wants to adopt the chipmunk?
Yeah, I said, are you going to start calling me Dave now? We're going to name this thing Alvin? I mean, what are we doing here?
No.
Think it could have ticks?
No,
I'm not doing it.
Your wife, this makes no sense to me. Your wife is terrified of everything, right? Of everything. She's concerned about infection. She's concerned about going out. She's concerned about on a pre-pandemic, she worried greatly. Now she wants to bring a chipmunk into the home?
Yeah.
No.
That was her suggestion.
The chipmunk is already at the home. She wants to bring it in. Well, I'm pretty sure that the chipmunk has probably been in there before, Dave.
Okay.
Pretty sure. If he's that comfortable in the backyard, he ain't only just hanging out in the backyard.
Yeah, I feel like this was Richard Gere's chipmunk.
Yeah.
All right, we have some help for you here. Frank and Comac has an answer to your problems. Frank, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're okay.
So I think I may have a solution to your problem, Rick. I have this dog. She's the sweetest dog in the world, maybe 2 or 3 years old, husky, but is the Jeffrey Dahmer of small animals. This dog sits on the deck, and I'm no joke, watches squirrels cross over the line, watches squirrels go up the tree and wait for one to drop. Once it drops, she goes, kills them, picks them up, takes them back. I mean, she might be the Jeffy Dahmer with an O when it comes to everything else, but when it comes to hunting animals, this dog, and she's sweet. I mean, I'm not telling you to adopt a dog, but if you're ever looking for that final solution, let me know. She's great with kids. Spend a day there, and she will clear that chipmunk out in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but here's my concern.
Get a dog. That's what.
I would be concerned for the dog. This husky sounds like a terrific dog. This is not just your run of the mill squirrel. I mean, I would be concerned for the dog.
But this I understand. I appreciate it. This dog hunts down, chases after raccoons, bites apart possums, like literally any small animal, or even, you know, a little bit bigger, she thinks is a chew toy. My mom used to get her, like, squirrel chew toys in the backyard, so I guess that's what started her fetish. But I'm telling you, some of these dogs out there, they're just great at picking things up. And you know, if you get one dumb enough, they won't be able to, or, you know, chase it the wrong way. But this one, I'm telling you, is the fastest dog I've seen, and that thing will just clear your troubles away in a day, no doubt.
Yeah, but this squirrel is not this chipmunk is not a regular chipmunk. This is a Joe Pesci and Goodfellas kind of chipmunk. This thing's not scared.
All right, I get it.
All right, we appreciate the phone call. So here, Chris, I'm gonna do it because I think it'll add levity to the show, and it'll frighten Rick to wit's end. So I think it's entertaining. National Geographic just today. Put out an article on an animal which you now need to be fearful of, in addition to the dog, in addition to the dolphin. Pinker flamingos, much more aggressive, intriguing the scientist. The pinker the flamingo, the more you have to be terrified of them. National Geographic today.
Yeah, so now I can't go to Florida is what you're saying.
Did it happen in Florida?
I got attacked
by a pink flamingo.
And here's where it all started. Yeah, but here's where it all started. You had attacked by a maltipoo, bit my face. Attacked by a cat, scratched my face. Also, little did I realize, because I must have chose to just put this out of my mind because it was such a bad day, I got a phone call from Mickey yesterday who was listening to the show.
Come on.
And she said that as a young child, we were strawberry picking, I got attacked by a swan as well. A swan attacked me. Swans are dangerous, man. Don't sleep
on
a swan.
Very much so.
I guess it attacks
the
thing.
They always
say
like animals have that sixth sense. Maybe animals realize that maybe you're not the guy we think you are. And they recognize that. And they're uncomfortable around you, and they go after you.
So Rick is the opposite of Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah.
Like whatever Dr. Doolittle is, Rick is on the opposite end of the spectrum.
I mean, just from example in the past, doesn't it sound like that?
It does. I mean, the dolphin attack, and he's fearful of dolphins, but now the chipmunk thing, I mean, the chipmunk thing is taking it to a whole nother level. Like, the chipmunk is showing
no
fear.
Stop looking at me, Swan!
Well, they can smell the fear. That's what's going on here. Yeah. Is I'm giving off the scent of fear.
And you were going to go to the Carol Baskin's animal farm?
No, I was going to be, I was going to drive. I wasn't getting in no cages with tigers and lions and everything. No chance.
Yeah, but God forbid.
Sashimi.
Yeah, he'd be sashimi. So what happened?
Yeah, I'd be the lady in episode two that sticks her hand in and comes out with a nub. That would have been me.
They'd be like, listen, someone walking through has been attacked. He has three limbs left. You can have a refund or you could just make your way past him and continue through the rest of the
nothing to see here. Nothing to see.
It's that is completely up to you. Completely up to you. All right, today on ESPN Daily, guys, the NFL, they've apologized for not supporting players in their 2016 protest against racial injustice. Now, Roger Goodell says he protests with them. Dominique Foxworth explores what's transpired since Kaepernick kneeled. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. Andy from Merrick is ready to go. What?
Timeout.
What?
Timeout. I can't wait for Andy. Timeout. Hey, now, again, a lot of Twitter is not good stuff. When we have conversations like this, Twitter is nice because you get good suggestions and everything else.
Right.
Okay, I just got a suggestion. You ready for this? And you guys didn't get tweeted on this. Coyote urine will get rid of. Where the hell am I getting coyote urine?
Petco?
Where? Can you get coyote urine online?
I don't know, but I would almost guarantee you could.
Is there an R. Kelly of coyotes around?
Almost guarantee you, if you go on Amazon, you can purchase coyote urine.
I can't imagine that you can find coyote urine just like on the internet. I'm not going on the dark web.
You don't think so?
No, I Google coyote urine on the computer. I could get out. I'll be arrested in 10 minutes.
Boom. Coyote urine. Deerbusters.com.
Okay. Listen.
There's many different places that you can purchase large quantities of coyote urine. Here it is. Amazon.com sells coyote urine.
No, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'll get it. My luck,
I'll
order
it to you.
No, I'll order it and Peter will knock down my door. What are you doing ordering coyote? I have a chipmunk issue.
And it's reasonable too. You get a nice bottle for less than $10. Free shipping. I'm going to do this for you.
Well, how do you get coyote urine? You got to go. Do you have to go stand around? Do you have to have a pet coyote? Like, where do you get the urine at?
I don't. These are the questions I can't answer. Can be used for trapping or predator calling. Brings them right where you want them. Great for hunting. He's going to have all the animals in Long Island will be.
Yeah, I'm going to be like this is going to be. I'm going to be like Ace Ventura here soon.
So good. So good.
This is not good. This is bad.
Free shipping.
Coyote urine.
Wildlife 523 coyote urine. 4 ounces of it. 4 fluid ounces.
Wow.
Imagine trying to explain that to the kids. Oh, Dad, we got a box. What is it? funny you ask. It's coyote urine.
Yeah, that is in fact coyote urine. All right. I mean, but who knows? It could be anything. They could just take toilet water and put it in a thing and you would have no idea.
Dina had just texted me, you can get coyote urine at Home Depot. No chance.
See, of course, I just found that on
Amazon.
What do
you mean, of course?
Seconds. Of course you can.
It's ridiculous.
I did not know that that was one of the things that you could buy at Home Depot, Dave. That is not.
If you can buy it on Amazon, of course you can buy it. Of course you could buy it at Home Depot.
Just poured it up. 8 ounce bottle of coyote urine, small animal deterrent at Home Depot.
Is that an actual animal coyote, or is that like an Arizona Coyote hockey player that pees in a bottle and sends it to you?
The bottle says coyote urine on it.
Like, I could get Grabner to pee in a bottle and
used
send it
by hunters and trappers.
Used by hunters and trappers.
Triggering hunters the fight trappers. Or flight response in small animals. Mark your grounds as an active predator area.
Why don't you set a trap
pests.
For this thing?
Why does Cassie set a does trap? Not want me to? Because Cassie does not want me to kill it.
So she would prefer you bring it in as now a domesticated home animal than set a trap. And it doesn't have to be a death trap. Just set a trap that catches it. Look you this, bring it this. Somewhere far
Meat
away and you let it go.
Coyotes provide the strongest scent for better effect.
Yeah, this isn't that easy, Dan. I don't know what this chipmunk wants. I don't know what it eats. This isn't like if I was setting up a trap for you, I could figure it out. I'd take a box. I'd take an everything bagel spring. You know, I'd do it all up nice.
Yeah.
Roll.
Cream cheese, right?
Cream cheese, some tomato, thinly sliced red onions, and then be done. I don't know what this – I don't even know if this thing wants to eat anything. He just wants to mock me.
I just think any deterrence that you throw out there, Rico, is only going to lead to further escalation, which is probably going to end bad for you.
All right, we got to figure out a way to deal with this.
That's how I feel about
this chipmunk. But Jimmy Jones tweets in, they're jumping you right now. They just need someone to blame for that brutal segment yesterday. I think you'll do better today. I have nothing but confidence in you, Rick. And let's go. A little theme music for the segment. Here we go.
All right, here we go, fellas. It is Tuesday. We're going to do our CMT, Cuddle, Marry, Trash for Tuesday. I shouldn't be doing this because Dave hurt my feelings. Whoever texted Dave hurt my feelings. But because I'm a good team player, I'm going to appeal to Dave, not only his love of football, but also his love of gambling.
Oh, boy.
The D-gen in Dave Rothenberg.
Oh, boy.
So here is the goal of today's CMT. I'm going to give you three NFL teams. You're going to cuddle, marry, trash, okay, according to which team you feel is most likely to go to actually go over their win total.
Now, can I interrupt you for a moment here?
Yes.
I was soured on yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought when the text came in, I looked at it and I thought, you know what? This is accurate. The tweet from Vinny Jones comes in accurate. You've already won me over today. That is going to be a complete 180. And I think everyone's going to love today's CMT.
Oh, this is NFL.
Right.
This is
NFL.
Vegas.
It's gambling. I mean, what yes. more could people want?
Okay, most likely. So you're going to marry the team that you think is most likely to go over their win total
mm-hmm.
for this season. So we'll start with Jacksonville. Their over-under is 5. So they'd have to win 6 to go over.
Okay.
Washington, the Redskins, also 5. And the Cincinnati Bengals, 5.5. Which wow. team most likely to go over?
Chris, you want to start out?
No, I'll give you the honors, Dave, because he's catering to you.
All right. I'm going to trash the Jaguars.
Look at this garbage.
I think they're going to be bad. I think they want to be bad, and I think they will be bad. I think that's going to be a three-win football team, and I feel confident in that. I'll trash the Jaguars. I'm going to cuddle the Bengals.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I like what they've done. I really like Joe Burrow. I think he's going to be an excellent quarterback, but first-year quarterback makes you a little concerned, especially in this day and age of where we are. So I will cuddle into the Bengals. And as difficult as it may be, I'll marry Washington.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
A coach that gives them relevance, a quarterback in year two, the best player on defense in this entire draft, adds to a defense that was already decent last year. So I'll marry Washington.
Yeah, I'm going to start out with the low-hanging fruit, trashing the Jacksonville Jaguars. They lost a lot of leadership this offseason. Calais Campbell is now in Baltimore. That team is going backwards. Nick Foles is in Chicago. So I don't know what Gardner Minshew is or isn't. I don't have a lot of faith in that program, and it feels like they're actively trying to go after Trevor Lawrence. So I'll trash them. I am going to do the same thing that Dave Rothenberg did. I'm going to marry the Washington Redskins. I think adding Ron Rivera brings some stability to that organization. And I think Dwayne Haskins takes a big jump from year one to year two. And I will cuddle the Bengals. I love Joe Burrow. I don't love the situation that he's going into. It's still the Bengals. They're still slightly dysfunctional. So I'll cuddle them.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
Yeah, and Cincy's division two, by the way. All right, let's go to teams that have over-unders for 7.5. Going to have to win 8 games to go over. I'm going to give you
these are all at 7.5.
All at 7.5.
Okay.
Yep. Very respectable 7.5. You'd know nothing about 7.5. Here we go. I'm going to give you the Mitch Trubisky Chicago Bears, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Houston Texans.
Houston, 7.5, huh?
Wow.
All right, Chris, you go ahead with this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with this one. I am going to marry the Texans.
If it was socially acceptable,
at 7.5. They've won the division 4 out of the last 5 years, and I know we don't love Bill O'Brien, the general manager, but Bill O'Brien, the coach, is not bad. And so for that reason, I think that they're going to go over that. They're going to compete for the division title. They're over 7.5. I'm going to cuddle the Chicago Bears going over 7.5 just because I don't like the option of the Falcons going over 7.5 with their division. So I just think that, you know, the juggernauts in the NFC North are a lot less daunting than the juggernauts in the NFC South. So for that reason, I'll go with the Bears and bombs cuddle them in our trash with our seeds.
This garbage. Look at this garbage.
All right, okay, now Dave? I do look at Houston. Yeah, I'm in a little coughing fit, but I'm okay. I don't have a mute button here. I look at Houston in that loaded AFC, and my thought is that I'm gonna marry them. They're gonna go over 7.5. I mean, you're telling me that with that level of quarterback, that they can't be an 8-win football team? No, I will absolutely marry.
If it was
Houston.
Socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm gonna cuddle Atlanta. I know the division is tough, but they played much better second half of the season last year, and they had all sorts of injuries. So I will cuddle Atlanta, and I don't want any part of Chicago.
Look at this garbage!
You don't have a quarterback that I trust over the long term. I don't know who they're going to start to begin this season. I could see this spiraling out of control. So I will say, trash the Chicago Bears.
All right, here we go. Battle of 9.5 wins. 9.5. I'm going to give you Philly.
Big number.
I'm going to give you Dallas. And I'm going to give you Tampa Bay.
All right, so Dallas, Philly, Tampa. All right. I'm going to jump right in. I'm going to marry Tampa.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that team. I think that's a good, solid 10-win team. Offensively, I mean, with Brady, with the receivers, with the multiple tight ends, with Gronk coming back, with O.J. Howard, I mean, it's concerning the talent they have there offensively. And they're not a bad defense as well. So I'll marry Tampa. This comes as no surprise. I'm going to cuddle into Philadelphia. I'm going to welcome Philly close into the chest and wouldn't marry them. Wouldn't trash them. So I will cuddle Philadelphia.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
You know, last season, when push came to shove, they were able to beat Dallas, where Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, you know, did not play well in that game in Philadelphia. So I'll cuddle into Philadelphia. And I will trash the Dallas Cowboys, because I'm just not a believer. I'm not. I don't think that's a team that's going to win over 9.5 games.
Hey.
I'll kick them to the curb. You're Dallas Cowboys.
Interesting. Okay.
Such a troll.
Interesting. Okay. I know this is going to sound a little bit strange, but I'm going to marry the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I just think with Tom Brady, that brings in another air of, not only an air of credibility at the quarterback position, but you also set a standard of excellence that they just haven't had in Tampa for a really long time. And I think with the talent that they've already got on that team, when you introduce that, that leads to a double-digit win season. So I'm going to marry Tampa. I'm going to cuddle the Dallas Cowboys.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I mean, as far as the teams go, I just think that the Dallas Cowboys, their biggest impediment last year was their head coach. I just don't think that Jason Garrett is a quality head coach in this league. I think Mike McCarthy has proven that he is. He's got a Super Bowl on his resume. So I think with the upgrade in coach and then the weapons that they continue to place around Dak Prescott and that revamped defense, I just feel like the Dallas Cowboys realize the expectations that we had for them last year in 2020. So I'm going to cuddle them. And I'm going to trash the Philadelphia Eagles.
Firmly garbage.
Just because I don't have a lot of confidence that their quarterback is going to be able to stay healthy all 16.
All right, we got the battle of the big boys. This could be controversial. I'm going to give you Kansas City at 11.5. The Baltimore Ravens at 11. And the San Francisco Jimmy Garoppolo's at 10.5.
Whew. All right, Chris, I think it's your turn if you'd like to start here.
All right, I am going to roll with, I'm going to marry Baltimore going over 11.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I mean, if just based on that division, I feel like that's the team that has the least amount of questions, especially at the quarterback position. So I'm going to marry Baltimore going over 11 wins. I am going to cuddle right up to Kansas City going over 11.5 because they have the best player in football. In Pat Mahomes, and they just continue to find ways to solidify the roster around him. Adding Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the end of the first round, I thought was a huge move. Andy Reid compared him to Brian Westbrook. If you give Pat Mahomes a Brian Westbrook-esque type of weapon in the backfield, I just there's no telling what this offense could evolve into. And then I am going to trash the San Francisco 49ers at 10.5. I think they have a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover. I think the Seattle Seahawks win the NFC West.
All right. I feel like you could give Pat Mahomes Russell Westbrook, and he could make it work.
He probably could. He could throw with either hand. I'm going to marry Baltimore. I'm going to agree with Chris.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I mean, that's a team that hasn't had postseason success, but they've had tremendous regular season success. So I will marry Baltimore. Now I'm torn. And I'm torn because of your number. Because Kansas City's at 11.5. It's a huge number. And he was hurt last year. But they're so good. I'll cuddle Kansas City.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I figured that they're going to be a 12-win team or better, and he's so good. I worry about that Super Bowl hangover a little bit, though. And just because that division, I mean, Arizona is going to be better. Seattle is a really, really competitive team. So the Rams, I don't think, are a bad team either. I think that's at least a 500 football team. I will trash San Francisco, but I don't feel...
Look at this garbage!
I don't feel all that confident in that one.
Yeah, the other thing, too, to take into account, remember, only the number one seed gets the bye.
Right.
So it's going to be important.
We got the seven teams from each conference going to the postseason now.
Yes, sir. And here we go. The final one for today, CMT. We're going to include the locals. Got to win 7 games to hit the over. Seven. Got Jets 6.5. Giants 6. And the team, for some reason, that scares the hell out of me, and just because it would be embarrassing, the Miami Dolphins at 6.
All right, so Dolphins are at 6, which means they'd also have to win 7, right?
Yeah, that's why they're all in the same category.
Right. Have to win I'm going to trash the Dolphins.
Look at this garbage!
I mean, listen, they're heading in the right direction. I don't know how much Tua is going to play. Fitzpatrick was good last year. Is he going to give you that again? They'll be a better team, but I don't know that they get to 7. I'm going to cuddle the Giants.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I don't feel overly confident that they get to 7 either. Schedule's not great. Better offense. Defense still has major question marks. If the Giants got to 7 wins, I think as a Giants fan, you'd be pretty pleased. And I'm going to marry the Jets.
Hold on, 7. Hold on. Time out. Ray, make sure you don't play the clip. I'm going to need Dave to say this so we can. Okay, would you like to do with the Jets, please?
Yeah, I'll for this segment specifically, I'll marry the Jets.
Yes.
You can
if
cut that up.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I mean, if the Jets can't win 7 games, Adam Gase is going to be gone and they're going to start from scratch yet again. It's year 3 for Sam Darnold. They have to be able to get to 7 wins. If the Jets don't get to 7, you're going to have a completely new coaching staff next season. I'll marry the Jets. Great. Of course, that he turns around quickly. I say, yes. play the start of the segment, and he doesn't have the music anywhere ready to go.
Yes.
But I'll marry the Jets.
All right. I am going to start out this segment with a surprise. I am going to marry the Miami Dolphins.
Wow. If it was socially acceptable,
going over
6
wins. Listen, they had 5 wins last year when everybody thought they were tanking for Tua. They still end up getting Tua Tagovailoa. I think we're seeing him at some point this season. But beyond that, culture matters, and it's clear to me that Brian Flores has built the right culture down in Miami, and now they've spent the offseason adding talent through the draft and free agency. I think the Dolphins go over 6 wins, so I'm going to marry them. I am going to cuddle up to the New York Football Giants. Even though I don't know what the culture will be in that building, I believe in the talent that they've got on the offensive side of the ball. If they solidify that offensive line like we all think they have, I think that Daniel Jones will take off in his second year in the NFL, and I think that propels the Giants to being better than a 6-win team. So I'll cuddle that, and I am going to trash the New York Jets at 6.5.
Firmly,
I don't have any confidence in Adam Gase as the coach, and I don't know if they've done enough to improve the roster around Sam Darnold. We'll see what that revamped offensive line looks like, but I don't know. I don't see a lot of skill position talent for Sam to work with. And when you have the best player on the defensive side of the ball being disgruntled because he's not getting a new contract, I just feel like the Jets are a house of cards in 2020. So I'm going to trash them.
So beautiful. Disrespectful. So beautiful. Disrespectful.
But you, so, feel there you, go, boys. You feel the exact same way, Ricky. I don't know why you're mad at me. You feel that way.
Allegedly, I feel that way. Allegedly. No one knows that. And there you go, boys. That is a Tuesday edition of Cuddle, Marry, Trash.
Oh, and a much better version of Knobs, of CMT than you give
that us. Was awesome. That was awesome.
A beautiful. I mean, it, you awesome. Incorporated the gambling world. You incorporated the NFL. I mean, that was very well done.
I appreciate that. Thank you, David.
And just to reinforce how good it was, the same person sent me a text. Now, this is what we're talking about, it says.
I still want to know who that person is.
I'll marry the Jets.
Oh, yes. That's forever.
You can have it. You guys can play whatever you want.
Forever.
It was for a segment.
Not that no one knows that.
Oh, I know.
You don't hear that clip and say segment. It doesn't matter what you know. That's what I can prove. Play it again, Santi.
He's not listening to you.
I'll marry the Jets.
See? He wasn't even listening.
So good. So good. That's so good.
All right. You can have that. When your team wins four games and you're looking for a new head coach, Jamal Adams is forcing his way out of New York, then we'll see who has the last laugh.
There was something said on PFT this morning about the Jets that does concern me a little bit.
Why don't we tease it? And you can bring that up next on 98.7 ESPN. The Knicks have issued a statement, the last NBA team to do so. Very brief, very quick. Here it is. Every one of us has a role to play in creating a more just and equal society where there is no racism, bigotry, violence, or hate. We stand with all who act for positive change. That's it. That's what the Knicks came out with. So, I don't know. Feels a little underwhelming, and they're certainly late to the party, but I guess better late than never.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't understand why they went through all of the backlash that they got for not issuing a statement just to come out with that.
Yeah. It feels underwhelming, right?
Well, don't you have, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, don't you have someone on your pay that you're actually paying to be in charge of your brand?
Yeah.
And to help you with decisions like this?
You do.
And what is he doing?
Collecting checks?
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand how they looked at this and thought this is the statement that represents the organization.
Or even thought that an email you sent was going to stay private. When the email was actually stating that we're not going to make a statement, you think that was going to stay private? I don't understand any of it.
Yeah, they're puzzling.
I mean, this was a public relations situation that you would have been, I mean, well within your right because of your track record to make a statement that wouldn't ring hollow, that people would look at and say, you know what, they are qualified to make this statement because they have practiced equality. They have made the right kind of hires. I mean, this was an opportunity that they missed to come on with this.
For years. I mean, they had Isaiah Thomas years ago.
Steve Mills worked for MSG for what, almost for 20 years?
Yeah.
Parts of 20 years?
I mean, Al Houston's been within the organization forever.
Well, you got Derek Fisher. You got David Fizdale. You got Scott Perry.
Mike Woodson.
I mean, I don't get it. Of all the PR battles that they fight, or they choose to speak about or release statements about. I mean, the silly fight with the Daily News, everything we saw with Charles Oakley and everything, like, this is the one time that you decide you're not going to make a statement? For what reason?
And then the one you make is tremendously underwhelming.
At this point, why even make one, though?
I think they probably felt obligated to do so.
Yeah, I would have preferred that they just not say anything. That probably would have made more sense to my mind. If you've already ticked the slings and arrows for not releasing a statement and having that internal email leaked, I mean, just leave it alone. I mean, to revisit it and issue that statement, that's so vanilla. Like, I mean, anybody could have said that. You could have said that initially and nobody would have batted an eyelash. But because you decided that you didn't want to issue a statement, that's when everybody paid attention. But to now release something, I don't know. Feels like they're succumbing to the pressure of it, Dave.
Well, I think that's exactly what it is. We don't want to say anything, which we all agreed was kind of ridiculous, because you are one of the front runners in minority, you know, hirings in the league. Then you come out with, well, we're completely against it, but we're still not going to say anything. And now you come out with this. So you had an opportunity to kind of be on the forefront. And I mean, to be fair, I think the Knicks kind of dropped the ball here.
You don't have to think. I mean, they definitely dropped the ball. It didn't make any sense. At the time, it didn't make any sense. I mean, the whole issue was everyone standing up together and, you know, showing solidarity, showing, you know, a sense of unity. And when, I mean, you're at the forefront of doing the right thing, hiring minorities, and you choose to be the one team in the NBA that's not going to make a stay. How does that make any sense to anybody?
It doesn't
make any sense, Rick. And to further your point, this is a time and space now where everybody wants to hear your heart. We want to hear where you actually stand on this particular issue, forgetting about the business of sports and the bottom line and all of those things. Tell us what you feel is the right thing to do for this country. What's the right way to move forward? And it feels like in terms of the Knicks' business practices, they're about everything that we're advocating for. They're about equality. They're about diversity and inclusion. So it just seems like they missed an opportunity to actually put the words behind the actions that we've seen the organization, you know, operate with for the last couple of decades. But they didn't do that. And then to release this statement today, it just feels disingenuous in a time where people want to hear what you actually feel.
I mean, the only reason you don't make a statement is because of the backlash or the criticism. Who's going to criticize the Knicks for making a statement?
Well, no one. And in fact, the players were upset that they wouldn't say anything.
Which is exactly what, not just the players, I mean, the people that work at MSG. I mean, it wasn't just the Knicks, it was the people at MSG. I mean, you had a black player for the Rangers have to deal with it this season, have to deal
with
awful.
Yeah.
Blatant racism. So I just don't, I mean, again, the only reason you don't make a statement is because you're afraid you're going to get criticized. Like, I could understand why Roger Goodell would be a little bit hesitant to make a statement because he's going to get criticized.
Of course.
But the Knicks have done nothing to make you believe that they would be criticized for putting out a statement at all.
If you would have put out a strong statement at the beginning, you would have been validated, and I think people would have been pleased that you did it instead of saying, well, we don't make comments like that.
But here's the thing, guys, and I know they're worried about the backlash and all the criticism that they would have gotten by releasing a statement a couple of weeks ago. But really, as an organization, you got to ask yourself, should we really be worried about the criticism that we're going to get by coming out and taking a stance against police brutality and against racism?
No, they dropped the ball. I don't know what more there is to say about it. The Knicks dropped the ball when it came to this entirety.
Yeah, this was crunch time, Julius Randle in the lane. spinning, and not winning.
I mean, really, is there anything more to say about it? They had an opportunity. They didn't take advantage of it. Then they succumbed to the pressure, and they put out a statement which was less than enthralling. They didn't do a good job here.
Yeah, but let's not bury the lead. Yeah, I mean, you actually hired somebody because of this. I mean, you're trying to get out from underneath this treadmill of dysfunction and how people view you in the sports world, period. Not just basketball, just in general. People view the Knicks as a dysfunctional organization. You actually paid good money, hired somebody to fix this problem.
Yes.
And all he's done is made it worse between going on First Take and then not, I mean, what? I don't understand what Steve Stout was brought here to do. To make it worse?
I don't think they brought him in to make it worse.
But that's exactly what's happening.
Good job.
That's what's happening. They're digging a deeper grave. I mean, they thought that people didn't hold them in high regard around NBA circles before all of this. How do you think people feel about the Knicks right now? How do you think players for the Knicks feel about their own team?
You know how they feel. They came out and said how upset they were with the organization.
But that's what I'm saying. It's absolutely ridiculous that they didn't come out and make a statement a couple of weeks ago when every other sports organization did that.
Yeah, really bad job. Really bad job. All right. Redrafting the NFL, ESPN.com story, 4 rounds, picked 128 foundational players across all 32 teams. Everyone is available. Every current NFL player available. Salary caps make no difference. They drafted 4 rounds and 4 rounds only. In those 4 picks, each pretend GM had to select a quarterback, a non-quarterback offensive player, and a defensive player. The 4th pick was a wild card, open to anything you wanted. We used the 2020 NFL draft order with traded picks reversed and a snaking format. And there you have it. So, as we can imagine, Cincinnati upgrades from Joe Burrow to Patrick Mahomes, top overall selection. Makes sense.
I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, he's best player in football.
Absolute no-brainer. Washington, John Kime makes the selection for Washington. Russell Wilson, number two overall. No one has an issue with that, right?
None.
No, I think clearly he's the second best quarterback in the NFL.
The Detroit Lions. Hang on a moment. The Lions will move on from Matthew Stafford and will take Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson third overall.
Got a little bit of a beef with this one.
You do?
I mean, if I was, I do, Dave, and I know that Lamar Jackson had an MVP season and the Ravens won 14 games, but if I was, you know, drafting a team from scratch, there's no way that I would take Lamar Jackson over Deshaun Watson.
Because of injury issues? Because of why? Just you want a traditional.
I think Deshaun Watson's a better quarterback. He's a more advanced passer than Lamar Jackson. I mean, John Harbaugh is on the record saying that Lamar Jackson has got to get better with throwing a deep ball to unlock our offense even more. So, I mean, I think that Deshaun Watson, as far as a passer, is well ahead of Lamar Jackson.
Well, that's good news for the Giants, because fourth overall in the first round of the redrafting NFL draft, the Giants land Deshaun Watson fourth overall.
It's a good pick.
It's a great pick. Now, do you want me to run through other teams, or do you want me to tell you who the Giants acquire in their four-round mock draft?
I would like to know who the Giants acquire and who the Jets acquire, and then let's also just look at the first round and see if there are any glaring things that we think could be.
I think number six is interesting, and Chris will have insight on that. So the Giants get Deshaun Watson, Yannick Ngakoue, coming back the other way at 61. Late second round, they get Ngakoue, which feels like a steal. Right? You would agree with that, yes?
Yes.
Terrific pick?
Yes.
Offensive lineman Teron Armstead, 68 at the early stages of round three. I don't love this one, although it's the fourth round. Allen Robinson with their fourth round selection.
I mean, we don't know how good Allen Robinson is. He hadn't had a quarterback throwing the ball.
Yeah, he'd probably be pretty good with Deshaun Watson, huh?
Yeah, I think that would work out pretty good. I don't think anybody would have any
problems. By the way, too, Dave, you should add, too, I mean, as far as this draft is concerned, each person making these picks, the de facto GM, you're doing this draft with the intention of winning a Super Bowl within the next 5 years.
Right. And, of course, Renan made the Giants selections.
Yeah.
And then Mike Clay, he then diagnosed it. He says, tier one, feels like Watson remains a little bit underrated by the general consensus, so I'm glad he got some respect here. And then Renan found good value the rest of the way. So Clay, big fan of what Renan was able to do here.
Yeah, he's ugly Kevin Burkhardt. He's doing a great job.
All right. Now the Dolphins went in a different direction. Cameron Wolf, fifth overall selection, does not go quarterback. He takes Aaron Donald with the fifth overall pick.
I disagree with that.
You would not. I think you got to go there.
I love Aaron Donald, but you got a top five pick. I mean, you got really good quarterbacks still available.
So where would you go?
Where would I go?
Yeah, what quarterback would you take there?
Next 5 years, taking age into account. I mean, you got some.
A quarterback does not go off the board for selections now.
I would probably go Kyler Murray, maybe.
Yeah.
At five?
Mm. Yeah. You're going to have an issue. Let me continue along here. So you don't like Donald. All right. So six is the Chargers. They take Ronnie Stanley, offensive tackle from the Ravens.
Yeah. Factoring age in, he's the best tackle in the game. When you factor in age, he's the best tackle in the game. He's 26 years old, going into what, his fifth season?
Yeah. He was the Eli Apple draft, right?
Yes.
Oh God.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was only taking what, like three or four picks ahead of Eli Apple, I think.
Yeah, he was the sixth overall pick, I think.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Man. The Panthers go Joey Bosa seven overall.
I mean, you're starting to see though. I mean, you're getting a clear idea of positions of most importance.
Yes.
You got quarterback. I mean, Aaron Donald's just a freak. I mean, he's the best defensive player. And then you got tackle, and now you're going to have the guy who goes after the quarterback. What's more impressive is you start going through the fact that both Bosa brothers go in the top 10.
They're amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Now, here's the issue. And I think you said next 5 years, right? This is a bad selection. Arizona, drafted by Josh Weinfuss, takes Drew Brees at 8 overall.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Brees is not the same quarterback on the Saints. Now he's going to be playing outdoors, And for the next 5 years, he's already said he's going to play for one more year, right? So what's that about?
No. Sean Payton said that. Sean Payton said one more. The assumption is Brees one more.
Drew Brees is not going to play for another team. And Sean Payton said one more because he wanted to be clear that Drew Brees only has one more year with the Saints.
But he apologized. He didn't. It was a Freudian slip. He wants him to play one more year. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that pick. And this seems like a stretch as well.
I don't like it.
And this desperation from the Jaguars. Jaguars take Dak Prescott 9th overall.
He's such a.
Dave.
I mean, and that's why they're the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You can't help it. Dak Prescott has done nothing.
No, he's a good quarterback.
All he does is win.
All he does is win. I'm just playing. Although I will say there are quarterbacks down the list that I would take over Prescott, but he's a good quarterback. Browns take Nick Bosa, 10th overall. He's terrific.
I just wanted to ask this question, guys. Are we saying that the Bosa brothers are the best edge pass rushers in the NFL? Is that what they're saying, or they're just factoring in age with this one?
Well, I think age is a factor, but you could argue that they are. They're terrific.
I don't know if I feel good about making that argument.
Where would you go outside of Bosa?
I mean, there's a lot of different places that you could go. I mean, Hunter in Minnesota, Chandler Jones in Arizona. Shaq Barrett had 19 and a half sacks last year.
But how, a Chandler lot of Jones different places you can guy, go. Right? How old is he?
What'd you say?
How old is Chandler Jones?
Chandler Jones is 30 years old.
Right. So if I offer right now for the next 5 years Chandler Jones or Nick Bosa, you would take Nick Bosa.
Yeah, I'd probably
take...
I'd probably take Nick Bosa, but I just don't think it's that far apart. I mean, in terms of overall production, Chandler Jones is a machine.
You can't argue that. I think the one glaring name not on this list in the first round is Khalil Mack.
Yeah, that's the other one. That's another one.
Oh, he is, but he's late. Now, Khalil Mack's not until 24.
But that's another guy that's in that conversation as best as pass rusher.
And he's still a young guy.
Yeah.
He can't be 30.
It's probably recency bias, though. It's probably, he didn't have a great year.
Yeah.
He didn't have a typical Khalil Mack year.
I'm just looking at the last 5 years from Chandler Jones. He's had 12 and a half sacks, 11 sacks, 17 sacks, 13 sacks, 19 sacks.
No, he's awesome. If he was 25, I think he's a top 10 pick.
Okay. All right.
Out of sight, out of mind, though. That's part of it. That's part of it, too, though. I mean, you're giving the people making these picks a lot of credit. That's out of sight, out of mind.
Gotcha.
He plays
okay.
For a bad team.
Fair point.
The Jets, Rich Cimini, our dear friend Rich Cimini, takes Carson Wentz with the 11th overall selection.
Yeah, Carson Wentz is, especially down the stretch last year, he was great. My only concern with Carson Wentz is, every step of the way, he's been hurt.
You're worried about, can he make another step?
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, he's been hurt at every level. He's been hurt.
Yep. Consistently. When he's healthy, he's a top 7 quarterback in the NFL, no question.
Yes, I would agree with that. I agree with that.
And then guess who the Jets get in round 2? Rich Cimini's spicing it up here.
Return who do the Jets get in round 2?
MetLife Stadium. You get Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes.
Giants fans will be disgusted. Disgusted. To watch Odell light it up in MetLife and him not be playing for the Giants? Ugh.
Now I'm qualified to do the nuptials. I do the nuptials, too, with the kicking net. I'm qualified to do that.
That's true. you could perform that, huh?
I could perform that, yeah.
He's such a good guy. Jets will also get Bradley Chubb, defensive end, outside linebacker, in the 3rd round. And then maybe the best guard in the NFL, Zach Martin, in round 4.
Maybe they should hire some.
Maybe Cimini should be assistant GM. I was thinking
Mike Clay with his Mel Kiper Jr. analysis of the draft, tier 3. Well done grabbing a franchise quarterback in Wentz at 11. And we know OBJ has elite upside. It just felt too early on Chubb. But overall, Mike Clay.
Is it ever too early for Chubb?
Never too early.
What's funny? I saw the line and I was like, do I read it? I have to read it. It's what he wrote, but now I'm going to get into all sorts of trouble here. So
no, he left it in there for a reason. I mean, you don't just look at that. You don't proofread that and say, yeah, I mean, that was innuendo left in there for a reason.
You think that Rich Cimini, the most proper, demure guy at ESPN, left that in there for a purpose?
Yeah. Well, he's making a statement.
Where's the beef?
That's a good question.
Aaron Rodgers goes 12.
Yeah.
I like it. I think you're getting good
value. Isn't Vegas one of the teams that people think Aaron Rodgers, when he is done with Green Bay, could end up
yes,
on?
Yes, absolutely.
I could absolutely see that.
There's people saying, there was smart people I heard not too long ago, last couple of weeks, say that you may get into a situation where Aaron Rodgers forces his way, even with the cap, it forces his way out of
After this year?
After this year, yeah.
Wow.
That'd be a hard cap hit to stomach. I don't even know if they wanted to, they could do that.
Well, it'd be like paying, I mean, it's you lose Aaron Rodgers, so you don't get him, but you pretty much, what's it, a $30 million cap hit?
Yeah.
I'm going to pull it up right now, but it's
I think it's in
an
that
enormous
range.
Cap hit.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I think if they do post June 1, they could split it. They could spread it out a little bit, but that'd be a good way to stick it to Green Bay, though. Have Jordan Love not play
force
a game, not take a snap, and then just say, you know what, I'm done. Trade me.
Colts at 13, Joe Burrow for Mike Wells. So right now, they're looking at Joe Burrow as a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, having never played taken a snap in the league.
That's all upside. I mean, that's all. You know who's that? Not to go through this entire list. Can you imagine Sam Darnold, how happy he'd be in New England? But, I mean, Matt Stafford at 28? I mean, Matt Stafford's
so disrespectful. How old is Stafford?
Stafford's 31.
Much older than 30, right?
I think he's 31 years old.
So he's never been on a good team. You got to figure if you could get Matt Stafford at 31 for the next 5 years, he's
32.
An upper echelon quarterback.
Matt Stafford's 32.
So still.
So you got to think he's got 5 good years left in him.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
And before he got hurt last year, he was slinging it all over the place. Like, he was having a really good season last year before he got hurt.
You can never question Matt Stafford's mental or physical toughness.
Oh, he's a tough guy. Drew Lock, 15.
Never question it.
Matt Ryan goes back to the Falcons at 16. The Cowboys take Kyler Murray at 17. This is disrespectful to Sam Darnold. Steelers take Teddy Bridgewater at 18. There is no way that I would take Bridgewater.
Yeah, but this goes back to, I'm telling you, Dave, this is one of the reasons why I get nervous about Jamal Adams wanting out of the Jets is because you play on bad teams, you don't get the kind of respect that you deserve for being a really good player. People just look at, okay, you're a good player on a bad team. Sam Darnold he's in year three. They've done him no favors at all.
No, nothing.
None.
Although it looks like they've upgraded the offensive line this offseason. But you're right. He does not have a lot of skill position talent around him.
Yeah, but upgraded means, you made an awful offensive line a little bit better.
Correct.
Yeah, you were one of the worst offensive lines in football last
Correct.
Year.
Correct. There's no arguing.
And you don't have any great weapons.
Middle of the road offensive line.
Yeah, but he's 23.
Just turned 23.
I think he's going to be good. I still hold out a lot of hope for Sam Darnold, who would apparently go to the Patriots in this Mike Reese with a coup for the Patriots at 23. Could you imagine Belichick with Darnold? He'd love it. Love it.
That's for me one of the most intriguing stories in the entire NFL season. What the Patriots look like with if Jared Stidham, like what Bill Belichick could turn Jared Stidham into.
Mm-hmm. Could you imagine if he's good?
Yeah, unfortunately I can.
Oof. I'm not sold that Jared Stidham is going to be the week one starter for the Patriots. But that's me.
You think Hoyer or you think they go outside?
I think it's going to be somebody from outside of the organization.
So you think Cam Newton?
It could be Cam Newton, but I think it's somebody from outside of the organization. I don't think it'll be Jared Stidham or Brian Hoyer.
That's a hot take.
Okay.
That is a spicy take.
And then lastly, the Chargers in the third round would take Daniel Jones, 70th overall.
Which is interesting, though. I think that's interesting. With how good a year he had, and you listen to, I brought up Chris Sims. I mean, he played quarterback in the NFL. It's his job to watch tape and break down quarterbacks. He actually had Jones rated ahead of Sam Darnold on his list.
Yeah. I don't think that's a crazy statement. I don't know that I'd agree with it, but I don't think it's a wild statement.
I don't think Daniel Jones gets enough respect for what he did in his rookie season.
He was.
I agree with that 100%.
With no running game, bad offensive line.
Yeah, and wide. I mean, Evan Ingram was hurt. Sterling Shepard was hurt.
He did well.
Golden Tate was suspended, wasn't he? Didn't he miss the first four games?
First 4 games, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And he had off the top of my head, the Bucs game, he was great. The second Washington game, he was great. And
tremendous
the Lions
win.
Game, he was
tremendous
great.
Overtime win for you guys. Huge.
Stop it.
Humongous.
Stop it, really. But there, you know what? If you can look back at a rookie quarterback and say he gave you 3 to 4 great performances, how could you not be excited by that?
You have to be. in his toughness, his mental toughness, not to mention the fact, I mean, you just listed all those things on the field, having Eli Manning still in the building, replacing a legend that's still on the team. Yeah. After 2 weeks? Come on, man. That's impressive stuff.
Yeah, he's built to handle New York. Daniel Jones is built to handle playing quarterback in New York. No
question.
Doesn't
he feel like Eli Manning? He feels like Eli Manning.
That's why they drafted him, Dave. That's exactly why they drafted him.
Dave, what does Eli Manning feel like? Do you know? Or would you like to know? I'm sure you'd like to know.
I'd like to know.
How about this?
I bid on a New Orleans challenge. I didn't win, though.
This almost made my head explode, though, too. So I was watching this morning. And Chris, I know you like the show. So Florio says today, can we finally put a rest to that whole debate whether or not the Giants should have drafted Saquon Barkley at 2? Because they got their quarterback and they got their running back. I was like, what do you mean? They didn't. That was by accident.
Exactly.
They didn't need to get the 6th overall pick.
No. You do not take. I mean, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into it.
I love it when you get fired up about it, Dave. I absolutely love it.
The Giants could win the Super Bowl in 3 years, and it will never be the right move to take a running back to. You could have moved back, taken Zach Martin, or no, Quentin Nelson, and landed extra picks. So it's not the right move.
Dave, they literally lit a season on fire. they torched the 2018 season in order to be back in position. Back in the top 10 to have a chance at a franchise quarterback in a much weaker quarterback class.
Could you imagine that, though? Here's what we're going to do, guys. I love Saquon. We're going to take him at 2, and we're just going to keep our fingers.
There's this kid at Duke. You know, once he finishes up, he's going to come out. We're going to draft him.
That's our long-term plan. We'll have another bad year.
That's our plan.
It's ridiculous because they thought they were going to be a good football team, so stop it. Lastly, do you know who Chris Sims loves at the quarterback position, Rick? I know you're a big Chris Sims guy. Loves.
I can tell you this. I want to give him credit, though.
Bortles.
No, but I will say this. Yeah, he does. I mean, he does have some swings and misses. We affectionately call him Nut in the softball world. His nickname is Nut. He actually loved at the time. He said Lamar Jackson was going to be the best quarterback in that draft.
All right, that looks good. And he loves Joe Burrow. Loves him.
I don't understand how. I mean, I don't know how you couldn't. Yeah, I mean, look what you saw last season. I mean, he's got the it, how he carries himself. He's a mature kid, and I know it was only one season. I don't like the fact that he's going to Cincinnati. I mean, had he gone somewhere else, I would like him more. You're not talking about one of the more functional organizations.
No, probably.
And that's the part that worries me a little bit, Rick, because I don't know how talented Joe Burrow is. From a physical talent standpoint, I don't know how gifted he is. And with an organization that doesn't like to spend a whole lot of money, like, he's going to be forced at some point in his career to try to elevate the talent level around him, and I don't know that he's going to be capable of doing that.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.